Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Wednesday, June 9th, 2021. Coming up this hour,
negotiations on a bipartisan infrastructure deal break down.
The Senate passes a bill to boost competition with China.
President Biden and EU leaders lay plans to end outstanding trade battles.
And the U.S. eases travel warnings to dozens of countries.
New Jersey's corrections commissioner has announced his resignation, and it is a blow for Trump supporters as Chitterelli wins the GOP nomination in New Jersey. I'm Amy Morris. More ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. A Yankee win in Minnesota, a Met loss in Baltimore, and the Islanders have game six with the Bruins tonight.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and U.S. futures are a little changed to higher this morning. We're coming up to 5:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. Right now, S&P futures up 3.5 points, Dow futures up 4, NASDAQ futures up 22. The DAX in Germany is down about 0.1%. 10-year Treasury up 6/32, yield 1.51%, the yield on the 2-year 0.14%. NYMEX crude oil is up 0.6% or 40 cents at $70.45 a barrel. COMEX gold is down about 0.2% or $2.80 at $1,891.60 an ounce. The euro 1.2190 against the dollar, the yen 109.49. Nathan.
Karen, we begin in the nation's capital, where it looks like negotiations on infrastructure have fallen apart. A final day of talks before President Biden's trip to Europe yielded no breakthrough. Ann Cates has the latest from our Bloomberg 99.1 newsroom in Washington.
Direct talks with the lead Republican negotiator have ended, increasing the likelihood that Democrats will pursue a sweeping multi-trillion dollar infrastructure package on their own. Negotiations between the president and GOP Senator Shelley Moore Capito of West Virginia ceased with a phone call after almost 4 weeks of efforts failed to bridge differences over both spending and funding. A group of Republican and Democratic lawmakers are working on an alternative compromise, and President Biden plans to engage with them even during his first overseas trip. In Washington, Ann Cates, Bloomberg Daily. Break.
And thank you. Geopolitics is also front and center on Capitol Hill. The Senate has overwhelmingly passed a bill focused on competition with China. Let's get the details live with Bloomberg's Renita Young. Good morning, Renita.
Good morning, Karen. The bill will invest almost $250 billion in boosting U.S. manufacturing and technology to meet the economic and strategic challenge from China. It's aimed at increasing research and development at institutions and expanding domestic production of semiconductors during a global chip shortage. Yesterday's vote was a rare spot of bipartisanship in a divided Senate. It showed the concern in both political parties that the U.S. risks falling behind its biggest global competitor. In New York, I'm Renita Young, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Renita, thank you. Now, when it comes to the pandemic, the U.S. and EU are set to back a new push to investigate the origins of COVID-19. The move comes after conflicting assessments about how the outbreak started. According to a document seen by Bloomberg News, the countries will call for progress on a transparent, evidence-based, and expert-led WHO Phase 2 study on the origins of the virus that is free from interference.
Meantime, the U.S. is on pace to fall short of President Biden's goal to have 70% of Americans vaccinated by July 4th. Still, the administration insists that missing that goal will have little effect on the recovery from the virus. Dr. Anthony Fauci continues to push for people to get shots.
If you had your first dose, make sure you get that second dose. And for those who have been not vaccinated yet, please get vaccinated.
Dr. Fauci says so far 14 states have reached 70% coverage among adults, with about a dozen more on pace to reach the milestone by July 4th.
Well, as vaccination rates climb, the U.S. is easing travel advisories for dozens of nations, including Olympics host nation Japan. Other countries the State Department has lowered travel advisories for include France, Germany, Canada, Mexico, and South Korea, along with dozens of other countries.
President Biden travels overseas today for his first time since taking office. He's casting a three-nation tour in sweeping terms, pitting the West against China as the world emerges from the pandemic. His first stop will be the UK for the Group of Seven summit. Then it's off to Brussels for meetings with NATO and European leaders. And the trip ends next week with a face-to-face with Russian President Vladimir Putin in Geneva.
Now, as part of those meetings in Europe, President Biden and EU leaders will commit to ending outstanding trade battles. We get the story from Bloomberg Daybreak Europe anchor Roger Hearing in London.
According to a draft of conclusions seen by Bloomberg News, the two sides will promise to remove tariffs related to a steel and aluminium conflict before the end of the year. They'll also agree to resolve a dispute involving Airbus and Boeing that's lasted for almost two decades. That dispute came to a head under the Trump administration and contributed to an $18 billion tariff fight. The EU-US summit takes place in Brussels next Tuesday. In London, I'm Roger Hearing, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Roger, thank you. Turning to the global economy now, concerns over inflation are in focus yet again. Data overnight showed China's producer prices at their highest level since 2008. Bloomberg Daybreak Asia anchor Brian Curtis has more from Hong Kong.
The PPI spiked 9% in May from last year, with surging commodity prices the main culprit. The estimate, 8.5%. Still, this will certainly increase concerns about global price pressures. Domestically, producers were unable to pass the prices on. The CPI gained just 1.3%, suggesting demand is still weak. Policymakers have cracked down on speculation and hoarding, but it's unlikely the PBOC will act as it sees inflationary pressures as transitory. In Hong Kong, Brian Curtis, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Brian, thank you. Turning to markets now, strategists warn another bad week for Bitcoin could be a precursor to more pain. The world's largest cryptocurrency is down about 10% this month to roughly $33,000, a little more than half of what it was in April. Several analysts say dropping below $30,000 could lead to another dive to as low as $20,000. And right now, Bitcoin is at $34,143.
And on the earnings front, GameStop reports first quarter results after the bell. Reddit investors, who drove shares to an all-time high in January, are still promoting the stock, which is up almost 1,500% this year, despite a turnaround that remains in its early stages. GameStop shares have moved an average of 17% in the session following earnings over the past eight quarters. Right now, GameStop shares are up 2% in early trading. S&P futures are little change to higher, up about 3 points right now. And straight ahead, we have your latest local headlines, plus a check of sports. And this is Bloomberg.
At 5:07 on Wall Street, we bring in Amy Morris for a look at what's going on in New York and around the world. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning, Nathan. New Jersey's embattled corrections commissioner has announced his resignation. This a day after Governor Phil Murphy said the state would shutter its long-troubled and only women's prison. Marcus Hicks says he will leave office June 18th. Jack Cittarelli has won the Republican nomination for governor in New Jersey's primary. He will go on to face Democratic incumbent Governor Phil Murphy in November's election. Cittarelli's victory is also seen as a blow for supporters of former President Donald Trump. State health officials are worried about whether Johnson & Johnson vaccine doses expire this month. The New York Times reports a White House advisor says governors need to consult with the Food and Drug Administration on storage procedures. Stony Brook Hospital, meanwhile, is accepting applications for its study on the Pfizer vaccine in children. Dr. Sharon Nachman is looking for parents to sign up their kids.
Not only going to see what works, but we're also going to see how much reaction there is to those vaccines.
Children need to be under the age of 12 and as young as 6 months old to take part in the medical trial. Uber and Lyft's efforts to reach a compromise with lawmakers in New York suffered a setback this week. A state senator scrapped plans to introduce a gig work bill this year. It would have offered workers union representation without making them employees. New York Metropolitan Transportation Authority is overhauling its leadership. Jenna Lieber, who oversees the agency's capital spending program, will be appointed as chief executive officer. Sarah Feinberg, who manages the MTA's subways and buses, will be nominated to chair the agency's board and will be the first woman to head that panel. During her two-day migration trip, Vice President Kamala Harris talked about economic and security issues, gun smuggling, fentanyl trafficking, and jobs. But her focus was to learn why so many risk so much just to head north.
It can be a very treacherous and dangerous trek. I don't take that lightly. But the reality of it is that we have to address the root causes.
Vice President Kamala Harris says she will visit the U.S. southern border, deflecting Republican criticism after meeting with Mexico's president yesterday. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Amy Morris. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Thank you, Amy. 5:09 on Wall Street, time for the Bloomberg Sports Update. Good morning, John Stashower.
Good morning, Nathan. Yankees having lost 8 of 10, having fallen to fourth place, needed a win in Minnesota after falling behind early. They got it 8-4, helped by four Twins errors. The Yanks had 14 hits. Everyone but Aaron Judge had at least one. Home runs in the ninth inning from Gary Sanchez and Miguel Andujar. Gerrit Cole starts tonight, roughed up his last time out, and Cole struggled yesterday to answer questions about allegations that he applies an illegal sticky paste to the ball to help the spin rate. Cole never denied it, implied he's doing what others have done before him.
There are customs and practices that have been passed down from older players to younger players, from the last generation of players to this generation of players, and I think there are some things that are certainly out of bounds in that regard.
Major League Baseball starting to check balls more often for evidence of the sticky pace. Long night for the Mets. They lost 10-3 at Baltimore. David Peterson gave up four runs, and then Robert Gsellman four more. NBA playoffs, Utah came from 14 down to win game one from the Clippers. Donovan Mitchell scored 45 points. Philadelphia won game two from Atlanta. Joel Embiid, who had 39 points in the game one loss, had 40 in the win. If not for injuries, Embiid might have been the NBA's MVP. The award instead went to Denver center Nikola Jokic. First ever second-round draft pick to win MVP. Stanley Cup playoffs. Tampa Bay shut out Carolina 2-0 to advance the conference finals. Vegas scored opening minute of overtime and won at Colorado to take a 3-2 series lead. The Islanders lead the Bruins 3-2. It will be a very loud Nassau Coliseum for Game 6 tonight. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports, Nathan.
And John, the NFL says it's going to fund research into alternatives to opioids, including whether cannabis could effectively treat pain without having a negative effect on elite athletes. The league's executive vice president for player health and safety says the NFL will offer $1 million in grants for as many as five research proposals. S&P futures up a point, Dow futures down 11, NASDAQ futures up 16. This is Bloomberg. Bloomberg 11:30 weather, partly sunny day, scattered showers and storms developing, high near 90 degrees, low 80s tomorrow under a mix of sun and clouds, few showers possible Friday with a high only near 70, currently 72.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. The dollar is slipping and Treasury yields are lower as investors await tomorrow's inflation report before gauging the direction of monetary policy. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures, little change this morning. Up a point, Dow futures down 19, NASDAQ futures up about 14, the DAX in Germany is down 0.3%. 10-year Treasury up 6/32, yield 1.51%, they yield on the 2-year 0.14%. NYMEX crude oil is up 0.25% or 17 cents at $70.22 a barrel. COMEX gold is down 0.2% or $3.80 at $18.90.50 an ounce. The euro 1.2188 against the dollar, British pound 1.4181 and the yen 109.47. And today we are watching for a report on wholesale inventories. It's out at 10 o'clock Wall Street time. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Amy Morris with more on what's going on around the world. Amy, good morning.
Karen, good morning to you. Former Virginia Governor Terry McAuliffe wants another shot at the office. He has won the Democratic Party's nomination in his quest for a second term. McAuliffe will go on to face GOP nominee and political newcomer Glenn Youngkin in the November general election for Virginia governor. Now, Virginia is the only state in the nation with an open race for governor this year, and the contest is expected to be closely watched as a barometer heading into the midterm elections. The FDA has approved a new version of a popular diabetes medication as a weight loss drug. The agency signed off on the medication Wegovy to be used as a weight management drug in patients with obesity. In sports, it's Game 6 tonight between the Islanders and the Bruins. New York leads that series 3-2. In the NBA playoffs, Philadelphia and Utah win. And in baseball, the O's beat the Mets, the Yankees and Giants win, the Red Sox and Nationals lose. Global News, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Amy Morris. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
All right, Amy, thanks. It's 519 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. And let's turn once again to our top story this morning. About 4 weeks of talks between President Biden and key Republican negotiator Shelley Moore Capito on infrastructure have ended with no deal. For more, we're joined by Julie Norman, politics and international relations lecturer at University College London. Professor Norman, it's great to speak with you this morning, although I guess with President Biden heading to the G7 without an infrastructure deal, he might not be feeling as great as he'd like to. What do you think was the final straw? Was there a final straw between President Biden and Senator Capito?
Well, good morning, Nathan. And the fact is, there have been long odds since this began with these negotiations over the size of the bill, the scope of the bill, and the financing of it. It's true that both Biden and Capito moved significantly. Biden decreased what was initially a $2.3 trillion plan down to $1 trillion. Also, Capito, representing the GOP, ended up proposing about a $900 billion plan. So it sounds like they were quite close. But when you actually break down the numbers, the GOP plan was only offering about $330 billion in new spending. And that's what really broke it for Biden. He wanted to see new spending at much higher levels. He said it just didn't encompass the scale that he felt was required right now for the U.S. for traditional infrastructure, as well as the broader sense of infrastructure that he's been pushing for this plan.
Does the breakdown of these talks have broader implications for President Biden's overall agenda?
Well, it certainly is a setback for Biden's bipartisan hopes. He was really hoping that the infrastructure bill would be the bill where he could kind of deliver on that bipartisan messaging. And it's important to note that he is still talking with another bipartisan group of centrists, senators, Mitt Romney, Bill Cassidy, Joe Manchin, and several other individuals. So there is still some momentum there. But again, it's unlikely that that group will be able to bridge these gaps either. So for Biden, it's now going to be a choice of how to move forward next. He's not going to give up on this package. He really sees this as a signature part of his administration, of this first term. And so his choice now will be whether to push this through via reconciliation, and Schumer is apparently starting to develop the plans for that, or to break down the package into several smaller bills that perhaps one could pass in a bipartisan measure and another could pass more through the go-it-alone approach. But again, for Biden, he wants to see this go through.
Yeah, I mean, there are still a number of big questions about whether Democrats can go it alone through a reconciliation procedure. We got a word from the Senate parliamentarian earlier this week that some aspects of the infrastructure package wouldn't be able to pass with just a simple majority. And then there's the question of Senator Manchin, the other senator from West Virginia, who sounds pretty adamant against infrastructure package going forward without at least some Republican support.
Well, that's exactly right. And I think that Biden is realistic about the fact that if this goes through via reconciliation, the bill is going to have to be trimmed down because it is just quite wide in scope right now. And not all of that will fit into the kind of the budgetary necessity from moving it through reconciliation. But the other thing to point out is with these negotiations, even when they're unsuccessful, for Biden, it was important just to have that process of good faith negotiations for keeping Democratic centrists like Manchin in particular on board. Manchin made it very clear that he would not even support a reconciliation process, wouldn't support the Democrats on this bill unless there was at least a real effort to make it bipartisan. And again, we'll see what happens with the centrist group, whether there's going to be some bipartisan support or not. But it is important to get Manchin's vote that Biden showed that there were negotiations and a goodwill effort there.
In our last minute here, Professor, the president's heading your way in just a few hours for the G7 in the UK. What are your expectations? What are you going to be watching for as the G7 leaders meet?
Well, Biden will certainly be using this as an opportunity to just reset the tone of international relations for the United States after the Trump administration. He's going to be trying to project his own foreign policy, but really just a shift in the tone and style of foreign policy as well. Obviously, the G7 will be focusing on some of the pressing issues right now, the global vaccine distribution, economic recovery, as well as longer-term issues like climate change. But for Biden, a lot of it's just going to be a point of resetting these relationships, shoring up relations with allies, and really getting his own imprints on moving forward with groups like the G7, NATO, and also the EU.
Thank you for this, Julie Norman, Politics and International Relations Lecturer from University College London, joining us this morning on Bloomberg Daybreak. Looking ahead to the market open on this Wednesday morning, futures are mixed. S&P futures up 2 points, Dow futures down 10, NASDAQ futures up 16 points. So little change for the equity markets on this Wednesday morning. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Bloomberg 11:30 weather, partly sunny today. Could see some scattered showers and storms with a high near 90 degrees. Less humid tomorrow, low 80s. We'll be only near 70 on Friday with a few more showers possible.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130. To Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 99.1. To Boston, Bloomberg 1061. To San Francisco, Bloomberg 960. To the country, Sirius XM Channel 119. And around the globe, the Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and we're just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. President Biden's hopes for a bipartisan infrastructure deal appear to be dimming this morning. Direct talks have ended, increasing the likelihood that Democrats pursue a sweeping multi-trillion dollar package on their own. We got reaction from Tennessee Republican Senator Marsha Blackburn.
Maybe the president needs to let the House and Senate do their work and not try to evolve the definition of infrastructure to mean child care, elder care, beefing up support for unions, and these different components that had absolutely nothing to do with infrastructure.
Senator Blackburn and other Republicans are pushing for a smaller package than the White House wants. Meantime, new bipartisan talks are kicking off in the Senate, where a group of lawmakers are working on an alternative compromise.
Well, there is evidence of some bipartisan agreement on Capitol Hill. The Senate has overwhelmingly passed a bill focused on competition with China. We get the details on that live from Bloomberg's Renita Young. Renita?
Nathan, the bill will invest almost $250 billion in boosting U.S. manufacturing and technology. It's aimed at increasing research and development at institutions and expanding domestic production of semiconductors during a global chip shortage. Now, yesterday's vote was a rare spot of bipartisanship in a divided Senate. It showed the concern in both political parties that the U.S. risks falling behind its biggest global competitor. In New York, I'm Renita Young, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thanks, Renita. The U.S. and EU are making a new push to investigate the origins of COVID-19. The move comes after conflicting assessments about how the outbreak started. According to a document seen by Bloomberg News, the countries will call for progress on a transparent, evidence-based, and expert-led WHO Phase 2 study on the origins of the virus.
President Biden and European Union leaders will commit next week to ending outstanding trade battles. According to a draft seen by Bloomberg News, the two sides will promise to remove tariffs related to a steel and aluminum conflict before the end of the year. They'll also agree to resolve a dispute involving Airbus and Boeing that has lasted almost two decades.
And S&P futures, little change to higher this morning, up about 2 points. Dow futures down 14, NASDAQ futures up 14. The 10-year Treasury up 6/32nds, yield 1.51%, and the yield on the 2-year 0.14%. Straight ahead, your latest local headlines, plus a check of sports. This is Bloomberg.
At 5:33 on Wall Street, we bring in Amy Morris for a look at what's going on in New York and around the world. Amy.
Nathan, New Jersey Corrections Commissioner Marcus Hicks has resigned following a scathing report showing how his department repeatedly failed to stop abuse at the state's only women's prison. This a day after Governor Phil Murphy said the state would close the facility. Hicks will leave June 18th. Former Republican Assemblyman Jack Cittarelli will challenge Democratic incumbent Phil Murphy in the November race for New Jersey governor. Cittarelli won the Republican nomination in the state's primary election, dealing a blow to his Republican challengers who are diehard Trump supporters. New York City's law department has been hit with a cyber attack. It's forced officials to take the 1,000 lawyer agency offline while they investigate. Mayor Bill de Blasio says he believes no information was compromised. City officials are trying to figure out who was behind it. Hours after the Connecticut Senate narrowly approved a bill legalizing the recreational use of marijuana, Republican lawmakers say the House should hold off from considering the bill. House Minority Leader Vincent Candelora says the closed-door process is tainted, noting how there was one provision that would have given preferential treatment to a single marijuana grower.
The fact that that provision got in that bill to allow for one individual to profit off the state of Connecticut, I have to ask the governor, at what cost are you willing to legalize marijuana?
Vincent Candelora questioned whether there is enough time to debate and then pass the bill. Sarah Feinberg is poised to become the first woman to chair New York's MTA. Feinberg's most recently held NYC Transit during the coronavirus pandemic. She would replace Patrick Foy, the MTA's current chair and CEO. Jenna Lieber is head of MTA's construction and development and was appointed to serve as the MTA CEO. The Westminster Dog Show is being held in Westchester County this weekend. Westminster Kennel Club President Charlton Reinders III says it is an appropriate setting.
Lyndhurst, one of the finest examples of 19th century Gothic revival architecture in America, is no stranger to dog shows. For three decades, local kennel clubs hosted dog shows on these park-like landscaped grounds.
But it is the first time in more than a century the show won't be held in New York City. Global news 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Amy Morris. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Okay, Amy, thank you. It's 5:35 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Sports Update with John Stashower.
Thanks, Nathan. Yankees and Mets both starting series on the road against two of the worst teams in the American League. The Yanks got a win. The Mets did not. Yankees fell behind early, but maybe starting to finally get some hits. They had 11 in Sunday's loss to the Red Sox. 14 more hits last night. They beat the Twins 8-4. Jonathan Loaisiga got his fifth win in relief. In Baltimore, Pete Alonso homered in the first inning, then again in the ninth. In between, the Orioles outscored the Mets 10-0. They won 10-3. The Orioles have actually won 5 of 6 since losing 14 in a row. NBA playoff home wins for Philadelphia and Utah. Denver center Nikola Jokic named NBA MVP. Tampa Bay Lightning going for back-to-back Stanley Cups and into the conference finals after a 2-0 win at Carolina. Vegas lost the first two games with Colorado's, won the last three last night in overtime. Islanders and Bruins tonight, game 6 at the Coliseum with the Isles up 3-2. Here was Bruins coach Bruce Cassidy after Game 5, upset with the officiating and the Islanders.
They sell a narrative over there that it's more like the New York Saints, you know, not the New York Islanders. That, you know, they play hard and they play the right way, but I feel we're the same way. And the calls, the exact calls that are getting called on us, do not get called on them. So, and I don't know why.
The Islanders reached the conference finals last year, but tonight, the first time their fans can be in attendance to see them do it since they went in 1993. At the French Open, 17-year-old Coco Gauff right now playing her first career Grand Slam quarterfinal. Gauff an early 3-2 lead on Barbara Krejcikova. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan?
All right, John, thank you. It's 5:37 on Wall Street. Time for the Tri-State Business Report with Bloomberg's Ed Corey.
The company behind McHolly Bakery in Manhattan has filed a proposed class action lawsuit against food delivery companies. It claims operators, including Grubhub, DoorDash, and Uber Eats, have billed it and other food businesses more than allowed by New York City law. A U.S. energy company is betting it can revive domestic solar manufacturing by moving a panel factory from the Pacific Northwest to upstate New York and cashing in on government support. Convault Energy is developing a factory in Watertown and projects producing about 700 megawatts of panels every year. Two New Jersey natives have created a spiked coconut water. The company's called Osina. Its founders are Chris Allen and Vincente Sirocco. NorthJersey.com says Osina is 100 calories with no added sugar. The product can be found in New Jersey and in Delaware. That's your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Ed Corey.
All right, Ed, thanks. 538 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Gina Cervetti, and for WFLA in Orlando, I'm reporting that orange juice futures jumped to the highest in more than 6 months.
I'm Steve Potosk, and on 1010 Wins in New York, we're talking about how Americans are willing to go into debt later this year to treat themselves as the pandemic winds down.
I'm Caroline Hepcon, Bloomberg DAB Digital Radio in London. We're reporting on Chancellor Rishi Sunak pressing for the city's financial services to be exempt from the G7 global tax plan.
I'm Jeff Bellinger, and on WTVN in Columbus, I'm reporting Ohio's Attorney General is seeking to have Google regulated like a public utility, so search results can't give preference to Google's own products.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on KRLD in Dallas. The NFL is pledging $1 million to fund cannabis research.
And those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. Now, chief executives of some of the largest U.S. oil companies are set to meet today with White House National Climate Advisor Gina McCarthy. Here with more is Bloomberg's Charlie Pellett.
It comes as the Biden administration nears pivotal decisions on drilling and auto emissions. The session will be at least the second meeting this year between top oil executives and McCarthy, who is coordinating the Biden administration's efforts to clamp down on greenhouse gas emissions from burning the industry's core products. According to sources, the meeting is set to involve McCarthy and members of the American Petroleum Institute's executive committee. In New York, Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Charlie, thanks. On the economic front today, the government issues data on inventories at U.S. wholesalers, and another increase is in the cards. Bloomberg's Vinny Del Giudice reports.
Businesses are stocking up as best they can, restrained by post-pandemic supply delays. Seaports around the world are backed up as global commerce rebounds. Even so, wholesale inventories have been on the rise since August, and economists anticipate more of the same in today's data. A 0.8% April increase matching the government's preliminary data. Vinny Del Giudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Vinny, thank you. U.S. equity futures holding steady this morning. This is Bloomberg. Bloomberg 1130 weather, partly sunny today. Some scattered showers and storms possible, going up near 90 degrees. It'll be less humid tomorrow with highs in the low 80s. Friday near 70 with a few more showers possible. Currently 72 in Central Park.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. The dollar slipping. Treasury yields are lower as investors await tomorrow's inflation report before gauging the direction of monetary policy. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up a point. Dow futures down 22. NASDAQ futures up about 9. The DAX in Germany's down a third of a percent. 10-year Treasury up 6/32, yield 1.51%. The yield on the 2-year, 0.14%. NYMEX crude oil is up a quarter percent or 18 cents at $70.23 a barrel. COMEX gold is down 0.2% or $3.90 at $18.90.40 an ounce. The euro 1.2187 against the dollar. British pound 1.4170 and the yen 109.50. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Amy Morris with more on what's going on around the world. Amy.
Karen, President Biden leaves today for the United Kingdom. It is the president's first overseas trip of his term as he tries to reassert the United States on the world stage. The president has set the stakes for this 8-day trip in sweeping terms, believing that the West must publicly demonstrate it can compete economically with China. The trip will end with a summit with Russia's Vladimir Putin. And the White House press plane was delayed for more than 6 hours thanks to cicadas. Reporters on board the plane say swarms of cicadas invaded exterior sections of the plane, so they had to be moved to a replacement aircraft that took about 6 hours. The U.S. East Coast, as you know, has been overrun with cicadas after a huge brood hatched last month. In sports, it is Game 6 tonight between the Islanders and the Bruins. New York leads the series 3-2. In the NBA playoffs, Philadelphia and Utah win. And in baseball, the O's beat the Mets, the Yankees and Giants win, the Red Sox and Nats lose. Global News 20. 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Amy Morris. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
All right, Amy, thank you. It is 5:49 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. And as President Biden heads to Europe with a focus on competitiveness against China, let's get more on U.S.-China relations now. We're joined live from Beijing this morning by Bloomberg's Tom McKenzie. Tom, great to have you with us this morning. And as Amy mentioned, the president has been casting this G7 and the meeting later on in his trip to the EU in terms of boosting the West's competitiveness against China. Is that being taken in any way by leaders in Beijing?
Well, certainly there was some pretty sharp reaction from the state media here on the back of that Senate vote around that bill, that $250 billion worth of spending that, of course, has to go through the House, has to be signed off by the president. But nonetheless, there was a reaction here in Beijing, and they effectively came out with a statement saying this bill should be killed off. They said it was a threat to China, and they said it was another example, essentially, of the U.S. trying to undermine China's growth. And that is certainly how these moves are seen here in Beijing. This is an attempt by the U.S. administration, Joe Biden, to align with allies in Europe and elsewhere to undermine China's rightful place on the global map in terms of its economic clout, its innovation, and the recovery here.
What kind of effect does China think that the Senate bill aimed at boosting U.S. competitiveness against China will have on industry there?
Well, they have their own plan here. They have their Made in China 2025 plan. They've had their five-year plan that was announced at the beginning of this year to build out self-sufficiency. So they're very aware that this is coming. They know that there is bipartisan support for these kind of measures now. And so they're trying to build out their own capacity. You saw R&D spending in 2020 here in China at about 2.5% of GDP compared to about 0.7% of GDP in the U.S. So they're spending very heavily on areas like 5G, AI, robotics, electric vehicles. They see these as the future growth areas. Obviously, the U.S. does as well. And China wants to ensure that it's self-sufficient, but is also leading on those areas. So this will just underscore this action in the Senate, the view of hawks here in Beijing, that they just need to double down on these efforts.
And what kind of doubling down could we see then? And is China expecting any major developments to come out of the summits from the G7 and the EU?
Well, they're already spending very heavily on R&D. It was a record amount, a record increase in 2020. You had close to $400 billion spent. You compare that to the $250 billion in that Senate bill. It shows you kind of where we're at. But there's a long way that China has to travel, a long path that it has to travel. When it comes to the most technologically sophisticated semiconductors, for example, China's about 10 years behind the U.S. It's been very badly hurt when you look at companies like Huawei, SMIC as well, semiconductor company here on the mainland that's been cut off from hardware and software. Huawei, we know all about the fortunes of that company that's been very badly battered as a result of those restrictions from the U.S. So there certainly is a vulnerability here in China. They have a long way to go. They'll continue to double down on that R&D investment. In terms of the G7, they are concerned that Biden and the administration there is proving arguably successful at reforming these alliances. And we saw that in terms of the U.S.-EU sanctions on China over those alleged abuses in Xinjiang.
In our last 30 seconds here, Tom, is China feeling any more pressure with this new push from the U.S. and EU to get at the origins of COVID-19?
I think it's fair to say they are. This is a very sensitive issue here in China. They want to move on from COVID-19 and from the origins theory. Of course, you have the Biden administration calling on the intelligence community there to further investigate. Now you have the EU, according to our sources, aligning with the US on a push for a second phase, as they've described the investigation into the origins. Of course, the Wuhan lab theory is still alive and well, much to Biden's to Beijing's chagrin. Now, of course, many scientists say that it's most likely a transmission from natural phenomenon to humans, from animals to humans. But nonetheless, the fact that this theory continues and you have an alignment from the EU and Washington on further investigation will cause a lot of concern here.
Bloomberg's Tom McKenzie with us this morning from Beijing. Tom, thank you. Karen?
Nathan, it is 5:53 on Wall Street. It's time for the Bloomberg Law Report. It's brought to you by American Arbitration Association. Business disputes are inevitable. Resolve faster with the American Arbitration Association, the global leader in alternative dispute resolution for over 90 years. More at ADR.org. Let's get to the legal stories we're watching this morning from Bloomberg's Jeff Bellinger.
Several music companies are suing Frontier Communications in New York federal court. Plaintiffs say Frontier chose not to act on copyright infringement notices about content on its network. A lawsuit filed in a Washington, D.C. court accuses Coca-Cola of falsely representing itself as a sustainable and environmentally friendly company when it is a major contributor to plastic pollution. A new Nevada law ensures that hospitality and travel workers who were laid off because of the pandemic will get preference when their employers rehire.
Bloomberg Law. Everything you need, all on one legal research platform, including guidance, analysis, and Bloomberg Market Intelligence. Find out more at BloombergLaw.com.
Now, another legal story we're watching, a unanimous Supreme Court ruling that the government can block immigrants with temporary protected status from applying for green cards if they enter the country unlawfully. It was the third unanimous decision by the court ruling in favor of the government and against immigrants. For more on the case, Bloomberg's June Grasso speaks to immigrant expert Leon Fresco of Holland & Knight.
Justice Elena Kagan wrote the decision, and she always writes very clearly. And she said that there are two tracks.
So there are two tracks in this thing. There is who is someone who is a non-immigrant to the United States and who is someone who was admitted to the United States. And so what admitted to the United States is because you either enter through an airport, a land port of entry, or a sea port of entry. You presented a passport to a person with a blue uniform. That person swiped your passport and stamped it. That's called an admission. And so you need to be admitted into the country in order to get a green card. And then there's having non-immigrant status. They are students, they are workers, they are visitors. And what the TPS statute says is during the period that you have temporary protected status, you will be treated like one of these people who has a non-immigrant visa. And so the question is, does that sentence mean that you will be treated like that for the purpose of you can't be deported? Or does it mean you will be treated like that for the purpose of you can't be deported? And also, we're going to extend the legal fiction to you that you went to the airport and got your visa stamped. And what the nine justices said was, no, we're not going to extend that legal fiction. We're going to say that this just means you're treated as being legally here, but it doesn't mean that you came here legally.
So this is another unanimous decision. There have been three immigration decisions in 3 weeks. They've all been unanimous and all in favor of the government. How do you account for that?
This is a very impressive run that there have been three basically major concessions by the liberal justices on these immigration matters. And I think there's a couple of things going on here. Number one, I think they're definitely trying to trade for some of the bigger cases that they think are coming down the pike. And they're saying, let's show our magnanimity to our conservative colleagues in cases where we can limit the damage and reach these decisions, hoping that, let's say, in a case comes up next year on DACA, they'll be with us. So I think there's a little bit of that horse trading going on. But I also think that this can actually be fixed very easily by the administration. So all the administration has to do to fix this problem is to give every single person with TPS a document called an advanced parole, which allows them to leave and re-enter. And when they re-enter legally, they solve the problem.
That's Leon Fresco of Holland & Knight speaking with Bloomberg's June Grasso. Catch more of that interview plus analysis of the latest legal news by listening to the Bloomberg Law Show at 10 p.m. Eastern Time or subscribing to the Bloomberg Law Podcast. And attorneys can find exceptional legal research and business development tools at BloombergLaw.com. And Bloomberg Daybreak continues. This is Bloomberg.